The U.S. government wants to offload old military equipment in Afghanistan and nearby countries so it doesn't have to pack it up and take it home. Pentagon officials say selling 800 mine-resistant armored vehicles, for example, could make hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and save a $500 million in shipping. For more on the ins and outs of selling military hardware, we turn to Kevin Brancato, a defense analyst for Bloomberg Government. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
So, Kevin, tell us, when the military is considering selling things like these MRAPs, what sort of factors does it have to consider?
The military, overall, usually has to consider that, that the country is an ally of the United States and is going to use that equipment in a way that benefits regional and overall security. So they really have to know how to operate the equipment. They have to have a mission for it. They have to be able to sustain it. But in this particular case, particularly for the MRAPs, these are the V-shaped hulled vehicles that protected U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan from IEDs. There's actually a political issue at play here. There are a huge number of these vehicles in Afghanistan that U.S. just finds too costly to pull out, and there are countries that border Afghanistan, Pakistan, Uzbekistan, that would like to be able to have these. The issue is the Afghanistan government doesn't really want this very large, sophisticated military equipment in its neighbors that it doesn't really trust. And so the U.S. has a very difficult position. It ordinarily has some form of issues like this, but not such a severe pushback where the U.S. is committed to protecting the security of Afghanistan, and it doesn't really want to give the appearance of providing militaries on the border which are not exactly aligned with Afghanistan. So there's just a number of large issues here, but it's not the first time that the U.S. has tried to give lots of military equipment excess defense articles. This is a standard program for the Department of Defense.
Now, speaking of the MRAPs specifically, is there really anything all that technologically advanced that anyone should worry about it falling into the wrong hands? It's just a hunk of steel the back of a truck bed.
Well, you could think of it like that, but it's sophisticated enough that the Afghanis have a very difficult time of maintaining them. And so, when you think of from the U.S. standpoint, no, it's really not. It has standard computerized type operating equipment inside, but it's not. It doesn't have a missile guidance system. I mean, in terms of a threat to Afghanistan, the equipment that the U.S. provided to Pakistan over the past decade is much more problematic. I mean, the U.S. has provided upgrades to C-130 helicopters. It's provided F-16 jets. It's provided lots of equipment to Pakistan right on the border that Afghanistan should be far more worried about if it really thinks the military is against it.
So in general, though, how does the military decide what to try to offload locally, like these MRAPs, and what it actually makes sense to maybe destroy or to take home?
I think what they're really trying to decide locally is can the Afghanis maintain the equipment? Can they use it and maintain it? And is it really going to support the national security? So there's a very large-scale process thought through about what can the U.S. use, and what can it cost effectively bring back? These are extraordinarily heavy vehicles that they got to be shipped back. And the U.S. already has it brought back over 10,000 of these. And even in the U.S., the U.S. has already started to give these to law enforcement agencies. So there is a surplus of these. The U.S. can only have so many. Now, the idea is you don't want to leave them in theater if they can't be used at all, or if the Taliban will go and wind up being able to take them over. There is an issue of ensuring that this equipment is really operated appropriately. I mean, again, this is a program which the U.S. engages in worldwide. So if there is equipment in the U.S., then a country has to be able to basically pay to take it, transport it, train their people, and ensure that it can be used properly. The U.S. really sees this as a way to provide pretty modern equipment, not the latest generation, to allied nations that are fully capable of using it. And so I think it's a program where the U.S. extends a hand, and then the other country has to demonstrate their capability
Now, we had some history here because when the Soviets left Afghanistan, there were helicopters and other equipment left behind. In fact, the Army wanted to buy Russian helicopters for Afghanistan. Does that provide any kind of history of what they're capable of doing?
I'm not really sure. I think the industrial base of Afghanistan is people even hesitate to use that phrase. It's not really the logistics and supply and maintenance has really changed dramatically since the U.S. has entered the country, and so I'm not sure a lot of
for the worse. In other words,
overall, in the civilian sector, it is somewhat for the worse. But to manage the military equipment, they actually have a modern capability now. Granted, exported from the U.S., but that's not unusual. Of much more modern capability of maintaining. It's not domestic. It is a combination of a global supply chain being able to help them out. But it's extraordinarily costly. And so the U.S. would actually have to support that effort as well. So I don't think there is a cheap, inexpensive, organic industrial base that would be able to maintain a lot of this U.S. equipment.
We're speaking with Kevin Brancato, a defense analyst at Bloomberg Government. So I guess the follow-on question then would be, is this an opportunity for a contractor that feels like it could maintain its own presence after the U.S. is gone?
That's a tremendous security issue. If the U.S. is gone, we still do not know what that looks like. Until after we get the presidential election in Afghanistan, maybe some of the objections that Afghanistan has had to a lot of they're not going to sign the U.S. agreement. There's a lot of objections to sending equipment to Pakistan. There's a lot of tension. Perhaps that electoral picture will change with somebody new in power. And so it's possible that a lot of contractors would want to really see what the political stability is like before trying to make any financial investment that relies on a relatively large U.S. presence in the country to keep stability.
And from the Defense Department's standpoint, obviously, they think that selling this equipment could save money on one hand because they don't have to bring it back, and make money on the other hand because they would be selling it. But when you lay out all the pros and cons, it doesn't seem like there is a relatively cheap way to solve its problem. I mean, anything is going to cost money, right?
Well, one of the contractors that would win, yes. One of the contractors that would win, even if they demilitarize, is the demilitarization effort. There's a set of companies. That is what they do. They take U.S. military equipment and they drag it to all – They split it apart and drag it to all four corners of the earth. And that's not something which is it's very little transparency into that market, and I think everyone likes it that way. And this is precisely what would happen. Anything which is not, possibly has something related to the military, those components would be stripped out. Any bare metal is going to be scrapped. Tires or other sorts of, that's fine. They can find some other use for that. But when you do that, you inherently decrease the value of the final product. And I think there have been local entrepreneurs in Afghanistan who are very disappointed that they can't resell much more expensive equipment. But that's the cost of protecting soldiers. I mean, these MRAPs were made quickly and at great expense to be able to invest in protecting U.S. soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it was very highly effective. It has that mission. But now the U.S. forces overall are declining in numbers. The U.S. does not need this much equipment, and it simply is going to sit there and rust away or wait or do nothing or lie in wait for an enemy to seize. And that doesn't make much sense.
And given that war is only about 1% efficient anyway, what's the harm in just blowing it all up so nobody can get it and it can't be resold or stripped for parts or somehow benefit somebody else?
Well, I think that's what they wind up doing if we had to have the ships in the theater. Of course, Afghanistan being landlocked, that's not the issue. They would use them as target practice. But I think for MRAPs, they were going to properly demilitarize and ensure that they can check the box in the forms and say, yes, we have visibly seen that it is completely useless.
And just to speculate a little bit here, so Pakistan says that it is interested, but that's not okay with Afghanistan. There are problems with Afghanistan perhaps maintaining these MRAPs. Where can the U.S. go?
Where can the U.S. sell this?
Yeah.
There is any country that has expressed interest. Now, essentially, given
But it says it wants to sell it in the region, right? Or else they're going to have those shipping costs like they would if they brought them home.
That's the conundrum. They want to sell it in the region, but then they say, but they're not going to give it to any neighbor of Afghanistan. So something is not right with that discussion. It does not make any sense. It has to be one or the other. So I would think that there are some countries that would like to get these. And Pakistan, it makes sense. I mean, we already gave armored personnel carriers to Pakistan in 2010. I mean, 500 of them. So what the issue is with MRAPs seems to be a lot more political than it is about equipment.
I'll bet you Larry Ellison maybe would buy a few and drive them around Silicon Valley, or maybe Zuckerberg.
Well, five miles per gallon. I guess you have to have money to be able to drive it.
Well, if you drive a McLaren, I guess you're probably used to that kind of low mileage. Kevin Brocato is a defense analyst with Bloomberg Government. As always, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.